You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is the Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi. Vaccinations are so emotive for a parent because it is an invasive treatment administered to a child who is healthy and not ill. Now, the prospect of something going wrong is therefore most scary, and words such as mercury, fits and autism associated with them take on an undeserved power. And to help me understand vaccinations better today are Dr. Helena Lim. She's a consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, together with Dr. Kubo Ayik, who's a consultant pediatrician. How are the both of you today?
Well, we are very good.
Yeah. Okay. It's Dr. Ku's first show with us.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it seems like vaccinations have been around for, 40 years now? But it is sometimes hard to figure out what really vaccine campaign groups really want. They profess that they do not oppose immunization, but just want to ensure that it is safe. Now, their actions, however, suggest otherwise. How safe are vaccinations?
The objective of vaccination is basically to prevent infection. It is not only to prevent infection, it's also to prevent the complication of infection, such as long-term morbidities, death as well. So before any vaccine can come into the market, you have to go through many trials, and that go through phase one up to phase three, phase four trials. That will take many years. And as long as there's a safety issue is concerned, this vaccine will never come to the market.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, but you can never say it's 100% safe, can you, Dr. Koo?
Safe in terms of no major side effects, but certainly vaccine like any other medicine will have some minor side effects, which is the risk is certainly, the benefits of it is far outweigh the risk.
Okay, what would you say are the percentage of the risk? 1%?
It's like around 1-2% for minor side effects like fever or pain at the injection site, swelling. But the adverse severe reaction, such as severe allergic reaction, it will be one in many few millions, which for the last 15 years of practice, I've never encountered one. Thanks God.
Dr. Helena, some would wonder, I mean, what is the role of an obstetrician gynecologist in relation to vaccinations?
Well, to be honest with you, when I started toying with this idea about talking about vaccination in women, you know, some of my colleagues was wondering why you want to come up here and talk about vaccination. You leave it to the pediatrician. Mm-hmm. But in fact, when the more I give the thoughts about it, the more I am increasingly aware that things that I do automatically. For example, when a woman come to me to say that, look, Dr. Helena, I'm planning to have a baby in a year's time. So what should I do? So apart from advising her on her weight, you know, the food, the nutrition, another thing that I would check is that whether she has any immunity against rubella, chickenpox, hepatitis B as such. The reason being so is because if this woman have no immunity and they embark in a pregnancy and ended up having these infection during pregnancy, and this can potentially have a disastrous effect on the baby in the long term.
Have you seen many cases like that?
We have not seen many, many cases because the vaccination was so common in this country. But of course, certainly we have seen one or two cases which end up very badly.
Okay, right. Mostly with what? Hepatitis B?
No. Sometimes with chickenpox. Mm. Some are actually associated with rubella.
Right, okay. And Dr. Koo, I mean, vaccinations have been around for a long time. Why the fuss and worry over... How did this whole fuss and worry about vaccinations really begin?
Yeah, basically, I believe it is the awareness and as well as the information technology where people nowadays easily get access to internet and they looked up. There's some, you know... Some idea about how vaccination can link to autism, especially measles. There's some publication link MMR to autism. That is where people start to worry about it. But I believe you addressed the issue later on.
Okay. In fact, our parents and grandparents were very grateful that, you know, we had protection against the diseases because they were, they knew the catastrophic effects of not having these vaccinations. We have come a long way as far as these vaccinations are concerned. Can you just give me a little bit of a history as to how vaccinations came about?
Actually, I think many people first would know the story about the success story of a smallpox vaccination,
yes,
isn't it?
Of course.
The cowpox vaccination.
Yeah.
Well, smallpox was one of the major killer worldwide once upon a time. And somehow, one of the physicians, how many years would that be? Probably a couple of 100 years ago, probably.
Around
that, yeah. And they actually, this physician actually realized that people who actually have when they actually have contacted cowpox before, there is an automatic immunity against smallpox disease. So that's where vaccination first came about.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually infected young adults or young children with cowpox, which is not detrimental. Then they find that with that, they develop immunity against smallpox,
mm-hmm,
which was actually detrimental for human beings.
Okay.
So with that, that actually creates the vaccine, the smallpox vaccine. So in fact, this is one of the most successful stories in humankind,
right,
when it comes to vaccination.
Yeah. I mean, polio came after that.
Yeah.
Yes, polio came after that.
Right.
Yeah.
So the smallpox have been eradicated from the world. Polio and other major diseases like diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis is very well controlled nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas back about 20, 30 years, there's a major illnesses.
That's right.
That cause a lot of death.
How different are the vaccination regimes for different countries in the world?
Yeah.
I mean, how does Malaysia stand against them?
So I think it depends on the what is the amount of coverage that you want to. It all depends on geographical distribution of the certain illnesses. Like for example, Malaysia is part of the Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So all the common vaccine that we want to cover is starting from tuberculosis, up to polio, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, measles, mumps, rubella, and chickenpox.
Okay.
Whereas in other continents like India, they would like to cover against typhoid. And probably other country they want to vaccinate against yellow fever.
Right.
So it probably depends on the burden of the disease for each country.
Right.
I think the cause also play a part, whether there's a government be able to subsidize the cost for a certain vaccine to cover for the whole population.
Right.
So for example, like Singapore, they have a more extended vaccination schedule in the National Immunization Program,
mm-hmm,
as compared to us.
Right.
Probably more the costs involved as well.
Okay. Yeah. And how much has this list changed over the years here in Malaysia?
Yeah, for us, I think we have an additional few vaccines for the last probably 5 years, mm-hmm, or so. 5 years to 7 years. There's a pneumococcal vaccine as well as a rotavirus vaccine.
Yeah.
The chickenpox vaccine as well, but the rest are all the basic compulsory vaccine, mm-hmm, like BCG, polio, diphtheria, pertussis, hemophilus influenza B, measles, mumps, rubella. All these are already in place,
right,
for the last many years ago.
Yeah. And now on Dr. Helena's side, it is the HPV
vaccination,
yeah,
which was just introduced recently.
Yes.
You know, Dr. Koo, it is estimated that with the baby's immune system is really robust. It is robust enough to deal with 10,000 vaccines at once. Now, I think this is an exaggeration. Do you? 10,000 is a lot.
Yeah, basically,
is
I think
it just to prove a point?
Yeah. Certainly, I think to us, what is our aim for vaccination? We want to prevent infection. So we don't, if you ask me to give a vaccine which is not available, I can't give as well. So we give what is needed and what is the burden of the disease for the at the moment, so they will be able to take it very well.
Right. I think
no
what parents doubt is, you know, for a baby, you know, you're inundating this child with so many different types of vaccines. To us, these vaccinations are chemicals, right? They're not really, they're foreign to the body. And that is one of our concerns. So you're saying babies are robust enough to handle all of this?
Yeah, certainly they are built to handle it very well.
In fact, if I may ask, when we are actually concerned about all these things, because vaccine actually contains a live attenuated live bacteria or virus. It's actually a virus mutation change.
Sorry about that. Which so makes it even worse.
Yeah, but can you imagine that, you know, considering a two devils, two evils that, you know, if you have a live, you know, not attenuated, a very, the ones that, the real infection that can cause you very major complications and even death, and compared to the vaccine, whereby you have already tamed the virus or the bacteria, so which would you choose? I would choose a tamed bacteria or the virus rather than the one which is actually potentially can take your child's life away.
Sure. Yeah. I think one of the other reasons is that we, the ordinary person, don't see children coming in with these diseases as a result of not vaccinating.
Yes.
Well, you do.
Yes, we do.
Right? And I remember Dr. Christopher Lee of Sungai Buloh Hospital, when he spoke to me about the flu vaccine, he says, you know, when people come in and die of complications because of the flu, it makes him really sad because he knows that this could have been prevented, especially if you were in the higher risk group.
Absolutely.
So I think that is a point that we don't quite understand because we don't see them.
Yes. In fact, it actually breaks my heart sometimes to see children coming in with certain diseases that you know that it is absolutely preventable. Mm-hmm. Children comes in who pass away because of certain diseases such as pertussis, diphtheria and all that. And you know exactly that if these children have had been vaccinated before and this will not happen. Mm-hmm. And you have seen children with disability that comes in here. They are blinded, they are deaf, and they can't go to normal school, and you know that it was associated with meningitis before this, and your heart actually goes out to them. Mm-hmm. And especially with being a mother with three children, your heart really goes out to them.
Right. Do many parents choose not to immunize their children, Dr. Koo?
Yeah, basically from my experience, our Malaysian population is still very, very open to vaccination. So they still know the importance of prevention, and of course there are more education need to be done. Generally, the acceptance is about probably 90-95%.
Okay.
From my experience.
How do you deal with the 5%?
Yeah, probably I think, as I mentioned, education is always the most important. So we need tons of education to change probably an ounce of perception. Mm-hmm. So these groups of our population is the one that needed the most in terms of their education.
Well, one of the things that really, really, I think, throws all this thing into controversies is because of this paper being published, not to say a paper, but it's actually a newspaper article that actually claims that MMR is vaccinization is associated with autism. And therefore, this whole thing just go on and on, and it simply gets out of control to a certain point.
Right.
Maybe Dr. Koo can actually talk a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think it all started probably in 1996 to 98, where the person called Andrew Wakefield, so he published the relation between the MMR vaccine with autism, and that also published in the very recommended and well-known journals, Lancet Journal of Medicine. So from that onward, the uptakes of measles dropped, especially in US and UK. So what happened, there's a lot of flaws in the methodology, a lot of conflict of interest, which is not being addressed during publication of that paper.
Okay.
So finally, they found out there's no link between MMR and autism, with a very large study. And from then, a year later, you can see what happened. There's a lot of major outbreaks in measles.
Right.
In UK and in US.
I see.
That caused a lot of even death. So it's a very sad thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Coming up, we'll find out more about the truth on vaccinations. If you have a question for Dr. Helena or Dr. Koo, send us a text message. The number is 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi with me, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist Dr. Helena Lim, together with consultant pediatrician Dr. Kubu Ike. We're discussing vaccinations, especially in relation to our children. Now, Dr. Kubu, just before this, you were saying about 5% of the parents decided not to really go with vaccinations based on, you know, your experience and your practice. Do you find, what are they really concerned about? The reason I'm asking you is because in 2008, the British Medical Journal published a fascinating and underreported study about what sort of parents were opting out of the MMR jab, for an example, or choosing the single jabs as opposed to the multiple vaccine. Now, it found that children were more likely to be immunized if they had siblings, if they had a mother who was highly educated and came from a household with higher income. Is that the same in Malaysia?
I think it's mainly they're concerned more of the safety issue. Safety issue.
But in terms of demographics, would they be similar?
Yeah, I think it would be much, very much similar, yeah.
Okay, right. How do you tackle and how do you convince parents like this?
Yeah, to me, I think it's all... It's actually our my responsibility to tell the parents, as a doctor or as a pediatrician to their child, is the importance of vaccination. The whole objective is, again, I would like to emphasize here, is the prevention of the vaccine-preventable diseases. If you ask me to vaccinate your child against dengue at the moment or, you know, which is also potentially can cause death, I can't offer this vaccine because that's not available. So it's the most important is the prevention of the illness as well as the complication related to the illness. I've seen, as what Dr. Helena mentioned, the meningitis can lead to permanent disability, mental retardation, and of course a lot of serious illnesses can cause death as well. So by educating them of the importance of prevention of these major illnesses, so hopefully they will be able to understand why we are so passionate about prevention, because we have treat and a lot of time, probably 50% or even 70-80% we are successful. But how about 20-30% still can have severe disability or even death?
Right. Do you find that parents are find it very hard to be rational when it comes to their children?
Yeah, I think every parents would like to give the best for the child, their own children. Or everybody, or all those who have parents, will certainly agree with this. For us, we see in a very broader perspective, it is not only the child as well as it's also cover the whole population, even the whole world. So we want to advocate for the children's health,
right,
as a whole.
There is also this need to understand that there is a sense of communal responsibility involved.
That's right.
Could you explain to me, because I understand the herd immunity is what we're talking about here. What is the herd immunity?
Basically, I think our whole target is to get as many as possible involved with vaccination. If we can cover 100%, that would be excellent, which is impossible, certainly in certain parts of the country. So if we can cover probably 90-95%, that is very good enough, because through this mass vaccination, we can bring down the burden of the disease up to probably near zero. So if there's no circulating around bacteria or viruses and there's no transmission because it's been well covered, we already fulfill what we aim for, is to prevent infection. So the herd immunity is, in the sense, you cover probably up to 90%. So the other 10%, which is probably unfortunate, not being covered, but because of the burden of diseases is being brought down of the mass coverage, so these 10% have been indirectly being protected as well.
Exactly. So then some would argue, then why should I immunize my child?
Basically, I think...
If 95% are being vaccinated and protected, and if that 10%... There is a possibility that you would be protected as well because of the herd immunity.
Well, if everybody was to say the same thing, then we will not have any herd immunity.
True.
That's the reality of it. Yeah. So a lot of times we need to ask ourselves, if does the individual rights come, is it bigger than your social responsibility in terms of that? And that's a very tough question with no right answer to that.
I'm sure. What about the HPV vaccine, Dr. Helena? Do you find parents coming forward to get their children vaccinated, because it is part of the government program, but we also have a lot of children who don't go to government schools.
Yeah, but there is something still very controversial at this time, because we know that cervical cancer is actually associated with a specific virus, which is what we call HPV virus.
That's right.
It is very exciting because for the first time in human history that we are able to prevent a cancer with an with a vaccine. Mm-hmm. So that idea is very, very interesting and very exciting for a medical field for us. Well, the reason why it is so controversial is because cervical cancer HPV is transmitted through sexual intercourse. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this controversy actually ties into this aspect. Because why am I vaccinizing my children where they are not sexually active at the moment? Or am I encouraging my children to be sexually active by introducing this vaccination for them? So again, there's a lot of touchy issue about this whole thing about HPV vaccine, which I feel is actually unnecessary.
Okay. You know, I just got my daughter vaccinated for the HPV, and I was a little reluctant because I felt the HPV vaccine is something that's very new. When would you consider a vaccination new as opposed to something that's already, been proven? Yes.
Yeah. In fact,
Has it been around? 10 years?
Actually, HPV, the creation of vaccine has been over the last 30 years. In fact, the two scientists who were working on the HPV vaccine has spent their whole life actually studying about how to develop a safe and effective vaccine for HPV. Mm-hmm. One of them have sadly died before this vaccine actually being marketed and the clinical trial was actually completed. However, I must point out, like Dr. Koo has just mentioned before a vaccine is being deemed safe to be used or being marketed to the general population, it has to go through very stringent clinical trials, which is phase one, which is a clinical trial in the laboratory, phase two, which is actually animal studies, phase three, which means that it actually a safety clinical trial on human being. And the phase four trial is actually looking at the complication and efficacy and so forth. So in order to complete these four phases of study, you need many, many years of studying, a lot of money involved. But if at any step that one of where the FDA is not happy with the outcome of this clinical trial, this whole vaccine will be thrown out of the window. So therefore, to have a vaccine in the market, it just take a long, long, long process.
Okay.
So if anything were to be said new in the market, in actual fact, it's not new anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Has there been any vaccine that was not effective? Any come to your mind?
Well, we talk about efficacy of vaccine, but we must be aware that sometimes it's not 100% effective. For example, we know that if you vaccinize women against rubella, only 80% of women have developed immunity against it. I'm one of those who has no rubella immunity.
You don't have a rubella immunity?
No, despite of the fact that I have been vaccinized twice.
Right.
So, in fact, I'm very blessed because I live in Malaysia whereby there's actually a very big herd immunity. Yes.
And I'm helping you, contributing to your...
My health as well, that's right. Yeah. So, in fact, I flew through my two pregnancies without complications. So,
right.
I thank you to the Malaysian populations.
Some people argue that, mandatory vaccinations actually violate an individual's right or religious principles. What's your stand on this?
Dr. Koo, would you like to take that?
It's this
difficult question.
It's this individual versus communal responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah, basically I think nobody can force someone to do something that they don't like, But before they can make a decision, I think the most important, what is our duty here as a healthcare professionals, especially obstetrician and pediatrician, we would like to actually educate parents about the importance of vaccine. That's important. So, and of course, what the vaccine can prevent and what if there's contacted a certain disease that you are not vaccinated before. So what is a potential outcome, what is a potential risk? And of course, the safety profile, they have a right to know what is the potential side effects. So I think if I've already done my part to educate parents about the importance of vaccine, about the potential side effects, and I can show even from the data from smallpox, polio, diphtheria, pertussis, HIP, all these have been down almost to, we have hardly see any active TB down nowadays. It's all because of the vaccination. So I think nobody can force anyone, but before they can make a decision, if they have not been given a right information, I think it's very unfair to them.
Okay. I think it's very unfair that sometimes there are groups that claim that doctors trying to force patients to actually vaccinate their children or to take vaccination. But they must be aware that these are all informed decisions. As doctors and healthcare professionals, we have the right to, we have the responsibility to explain to you what is the benefit, what are the benefits of doing this, and what are the disadvantages of the risks of doing this, and what are the benefits of not doing this, and what are the disadvantages or risks of doing not doing this. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, it's very, we can't actually make anybody make any decision at all, but our duty is to explain that, so that the patient can have an informed decision. They can make an informed decision on the way forward.
Right. Yeah. Do you think parents are concerned about more the safety of the vaccine, or are they more concerned about whether these vaccine actually work?
I think for me, the efficacy, we can show them the data. Efficacy, as what Dr. Helena said, we can't prevent 100%. As long as you can prevent 90 to 95%, is very good enough. Even if you get the 5%, which will be very minor form of illness, which is manageable. So I think a lot of issue here related to probably the unfounded fear of MMR related to autism, or, you know, deafness and things like that. So I think the fear of that is more of the being publicized unnecessarily. Whereas we have seen, I'm sure Dr. Helena agree with me, we have seen a major illness that leads to permanent disability, for example, meningitis, for example, pneumonia, diarrhea even can cause death.
Right. And, you know, Andrew Wakefield has certainly caused a stir, hasn't he?
He has.
He's brought about a huge impact.
I wasn't sure, but I think he was struck off, isn't it?
He's certainly been struck off from practicing medicine by the General Medical Council.
Right.
So I think that is how serious we look at somebody fraud the data.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the worst medical hawks for the last 100 years.
Why do you say that?
For the last 100 years, we look at it, there's no any publication that prevent people from taking vaccination. And the next moment, you look at the data of outbreak. This is the first time for the last, during our lifetime, we can see.
So the mechanics of how he carried out the survey wasn't quite the best.
Yeah. In fact, there was actually a major fault in the study, actually, when we look at it in retrospect. And I think it was prematurely being released out in the media as well. So I think the media take on, you know, this as a very, very important topic. So it has gone off. And the damage it has caused is actually very, very significant.
Mm-hmm. More is not ethical. A lot of conflict of interest being not being announced or pointed out.
Mm.
So somehow it being published, and about 10 years later it's being retracted. Yeah. That's a bit too long, right?
A lot of damage
done.
Yeah,
all the damage done. That's very, very sad, actually.
Right.
In fact, as I was going through the publication about vaccination before I come here today, and in fact, that was actually very interesting to say that, to see that, in fact, certain websites, certain newspaper has been actually warned by authorities if they publish anything against untrue scientific evidence against MMR vaccination and the link between MMR to autism. In fact, it's actually very interesting to see that.
Right.
Yeah, because I think it is a bit out of control now.
Yes, because it involves the whole world population, doesn't it?
It is.
Exactly, yeah. The so-called wrong information is actually caused
so much of a damage.
Irreversible damage to the whole world, actually.
Yeah. And I just have there's a question that's come through Lee Daniel 84, and he's asking, what should parents do if the mother is a hepatitis B carrier? Do you vaccinate? Do you vaccinate the baby after delivery, or what do you really do?
Yes, we do. What happens is actually hepatitis B is actually potentially can be transmitted to the baby. There is actually a very limited data that we know how it's being transmitted. But we know that hepatitis B is actually being transmitted either through the placenta to the baby or during childbirth, whereby the baby swallow the mother's blood, whereby the mother is actually a hepatitis B carrier. So what we usually do is that in a institution, what we normally would do is check the blood to see whether the hepatitis is very active or not so active. For those mother who have very the hepatitis B status is not so active, for example, the hepatitis B E antigen is actually low, and they have immunity against that. Sometimes it's not necessarily to actually give stop them from breastfeeding. What we do is actually offer vaccinization to the baby upon delivery.
Right, but the hepatitis B vaccination is compulsory, isn't it?
It is
for
compulsory.
All newborns.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
There is an additional vaccine we call this is a passive immunization. So majority of the vaccine that we offer to our children is active immunization. Mm-hmm. We introduce a weak virus or weak bacteria to stimulate the baby's immune system.
Right.
But the virus or the bacteria itself will not cause any harm to the baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to help to stimulate the immune system so that they are ready for the subsequent threat. But passive immunization is we introduce the antibody. It's not the antigen. Eh? So the antibody into the baby straight away give a protection.
Right.
So we call hepatitis B immunoglobulin.
Right.
That's supposed to be given within the first 72 hours after delivery.
Yep. And it protects a baby from having the hepatitis B infection. But however, the passive immunization only lasts for a few days. It doesn't last lifelong. So in fact, after the passive immunization, it's important to introduce an active immunization by introducing the normal hepatitis B immunization.
Okay.
So the routine hepatitis B vaccination still go on. This is additional.
Yeah.
And by giving hepatitis B immunoglobulin plus 3 doses routine hepatitis B vaccination, you prevent almost 100%.
Okay. And why do you need, some vaccinations need a couple of shots? Hepatitis B, you need 3. HPV, you need 3 as well. What is the reason for that?
Yeah, all this is to prime the baby's or the infant's antibody, immune system. We know that our immune system will mount the antibody to against the vaccine that we injected. But after a while, couple of months, the antibody level will come down. So they need another shot to bring it up to another level. So by giving certain vaccine over the duration of 1 month, 2 months, or some booster dose, that will help them to achieve the optimal level of antibody.
In fact, formation. All this come from the clinical data of immunity. So during the phase 3 and 4 studies, what they do is actually they measure the immunity, the antibody which is mounted after the introduction of the vaccine. And they see the trend of the immunity, the antibody going up and down. So in fact, all these schedules are actually based on the clinical trial showing us that when does the antibody comes down. So therefore, you need to reintroduce or give the certain individual the booster in order to boost the antibody production.
Okay. Earlier on, I mentioned, chemicals in vaccines. You have mercury-based preservatives.
Yes.
There's something called thiomersal, I understand.
Thiomersal, yeah.
Could you shed more light on what that really is?
Yeah, basically, I think many years ago, this thiomersal is a mercury-based derivative where they used to preserve the vaccine. So, he had been linked thiomersal with autism. So, for the last many years, the tamoxifen has been taken away from the vaccine, and you can see the incidence of autism is still rising. So certainly there's no link between tamoxifen and autism.
Okay.
So nowadays, majority, I could say almost near 100% of the vaccine have no contained tamoxifen anymore.
I see. Is that only in relation to the MMR jab?
It's all most of the vaccine last time. Yeah. It's part of the derivative.
But it's been phased out.
It's been phased off. Yeah.
Okay. Your final message on vaccinations, Dr. Helena?
It's actually an informed decision is very important. It is very important to find out all this information, but it's also important to verify all this information rather than, you know, you hear that people are saying that, oh, it may be related to this and related to that. It's very important that we have facts rather than to believe on what you see, any words that runs around the internet.
There's loads of it.
Yeah, there are loads of them. So it's very important that you discuss with the healthcare professionals and have faith in the healthcare professional, because I think at the end of the day, our responsibility and the duty is towards our patient, not the industry. So please do not think that the doctors are actually conspiring with the industry. Actually, that's not true.
Funny, that's our topic for tomorrow.
Oh, Dr. that would be interesting.
Dr. George's show tomorrow is about disease mongering.
Yeah.
Your message, Dr. Kuhn?
To me, I think my role is a vaccine advocate. I would like to make sure the parents know to want to be a good parents. You actually... Last time we used to look at the Chinese proverb, you want to be a good physician, good parents, you treat the disease early, you prevent complication. But now, if you want to be an excellent doctor, excellent parents, you prevent the disease. So our aim here is to prevent disease. Don't worry about the link. If there's any link between any major safety issues that parents need to know, it should come from a doctor. In fact, from the beginning, if we already noted there's some safety issue, because we read a lot of clinical trials, we update ourselves. So if you think you need to know about the safety issue, it should come from a medical professional. We are the first who want to question the
pharmaceutical
yeah. or even we want to question about the safety profile before it come up. Mm. So my advice is, as what Dr. Helena said, we don't have any hidden agenda. The most important, we want to done our duty, prevent infection, and that is for the benefits of not only your child, it's for the whole population of Malaysia. If you look at bigger perspective, it's for the whole world.
For whole world. Thank you both very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Helena Lim, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist, together with Dr. Kubu Ike, a consultant pediatrician, on the truth about vaccinations on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.